Each week, a well-known person is asked the question, if you were to be cast away alone on a desert island, which 8 gramophone records would you choose to have with you? As usual, the castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Our castaway this week is a visitor from the United States, the conductor of the famous Boston Pops Orchestra, Arthur Fiedler. Now, Mr. Fiedler, we're dumping you very unfeelingly on this island. How well do you think you could endure prolonged loneliness?
I think I would enjoy it very much at the moment because of my profession brings me before so many people, and even working with so many people, with an orchestra of approximately 100 players. Mm. So I think it would be a great, great relief.
On what basis have you chosen these 8 records? Are you looking back into the past, or are they to inspire you for the future or cheer you up for the present?
I think more or less looking back into the past and refreshing my memory of music that I've enjoyed.
What's the first one you've chosen?
The first one is the third prelude for the Well-Tempered Clavichord in C-sharp major, performed by Madame Vanda Landowska.
Why have you chosen this?
Well, I think it's a very good example of Bach at his best, if I may say so.
Third prelude in C-sharp major, played by Vanda Landowska. Now, what's your second choice, Mr. Fiedler?
My second choice would be the Queen Mab scherzo from Romeo and Juliet by Berlioz, performed by Maestro Arturo Toscanini.
Why do you choose this?
Well, because it's a very difficult orchestral piece, and I think it's superbly played in this case.
The Queen Mab Scherzo from Romeo and Juliet by Berlioz, conducted by Toscanini. Mr. Fiedler, whereabouts in the United States do you come from? Where were you born?
I was born in Boston.
Now, your name Fiedler in German means fiddler.
That's right.
So your musical roots seem to go back a long way.
My father was a member of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. He was a violinist. I knew my grandfather. He was a violinist. And as far back as we can tell, they were all musicians.
So as a child, did you take it for granted that you would be?
No, I did not. Neither did my father. But I did take lessons on the violin and the piano at an early age of about 5 1/2, just for the sake of an accomplishment and for discipline.
Yes. When did you decide that you wanted to be a musician?
I decided it when I was about 15 years of age. My father had served 25 years in the Boston Orchestra and then decided to retire to Europe, and I was confronted by a decision to be made at that time, and I chose music and I chose conducting.
Yes. Where did you study?
At the Royal Academy of Music in Berlin.
Mm-hmm. What was your very first professional engagement?
Well, I don't know about professional engagement. You mean as a conductor?
No, I mean as a musician.
Oh, well, when I was a student in Berlin, my father having retired, I knew that I couldn't expect too much financial help from him. So much of my student days were spent in playing chamber music in various homes of German people in Berlin, mm. where the wife played the piano or the husband played the cello or something like that. And I also played in the theaters and to earn my way through. And even played at cafes and anything that could come along.
Yes. This was just before the First World War.
That's right.
And then you returned to the United States.
Yes.
What did you do when you got there?
Well, I was very fortunate to find a position in my hometown orchestra, which is the Boston Symphony.
Yes.
Dr. Carl Mook was the conductor at that time.
Following your father's footsteps?
Yes, exactly.
You played a variety of instruments with the Boston Symphony.
Yes, I have. I started as a violinist, then I switched to viola, and I became the official pianist for a while, and the organist. I played the celesta at all times. I helped in the percussion section, and I did general housework.
A little light dusting. Then after a few years, you decided to form your own chamber orchestra.
Well, you see, I was bent on conducting. Mm-hmm. And in those days, it was extremely difficult for a young American to have an expensive toy like an orchestra entrusted to him. And most of the conductors in those days were well-known Europeans. But I was insisting on the fact that I wanted to conduct, and the only way I could do it was to pull myself up by my bootstraps. And I organized a chamber orchestra, which I called the Boston Symphony, with my colleagues.
Yes. Well, there you are, a conductor. I think at this point in your career, we might break off your third record. What should we have now?
Well, I would like very much to do the opening of the finale of the Beethoven Ninth Symphony. Mm-hmm. And this is with the Klemperer and the Philharmonia Orchestra.
The opening of the last movement of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, Klemperer conducting the Philharmonia Orchestra. So, Mr. Fiedler, this was the pattern for some years. You were a member of the Boston Symphony Orchestra and conducting the Boston Sinfonietta. Then you embarked on a new project, your Esplanade concerts.
Yes, I didn't know that you knew about this.
Mm-hmm.
This was my own idea. It occurred to me that you get the greatest amount of finest literature in the world gratis at public libraries, as we have in the United States. You get the great works of art at our Museum of Fine Arts, of which we have a wonderful one in Boston. And whenever it came to music, you had to dig into your jeans and buy a ticket. And I knew very well that it cost money to maintain art museums and libraries, so I thought maybe I could dig up some funds for music to be free to the public, the same as the other institutions. And for 2 years, I went around and virtually rang doorbells to try to raise sufficient money to get these concerts started, and I was successful.
These were open-air concerts?
These were open-air concerts. They still are going on now.
And with enormous audiences, I believe.
Oh, terrific. Well, I mean, during the war, when there wasn't much else to do, and we had a great many service people in Greater Boston, we thought nothing particularly of having between 30 and 40,000 people there.
30 or 40,000?
Yes. You see, it was free. There were no gates. There were no barriers.
Yes.
You could rent a chair for the great sum of 10 cents, or you could bring your own camp chair, or you could lie on the grass.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Then in 1930, 35 years ago, a musical appointment that was very important to you and indeed to Boston.
Well, that was the appointment as conductor of the Boston Pops Orchestra.
Yeah. Now, the Boston Pops concerts started as promenade concerts. And
they were started in 1885, and I think they were called promenade concerts. And this was a word that the Americans didn't take to so well. They played music in those days that was popular. By popular, we mean Schubert, Tchaikovsky, waltzes of Strauss, marches, and so forth. The public themselves, instead of saying popular concerts, shortened it and said Pops.
Yes. And this was a spring season by members of the Boston Symphony Orchestra.
Yes, it immediately follows the winter season by 97 of the players from the Boston Symphony Orchestra.
Mm-hmm. And drinks are served during the concert in Symphony Hall.
That's right. You don't have to drink if you don't want to. And you can have champagne, light wines, beer, and soft drinks.
Yes.
But and you may smoke. It's a very delightful way to enjoy music of that type, performed as well as we know how.
Mm-hmm. Apart from the light classics, you also have show music and a few popular tunes, and also a lot of new music.
Yes, we've had many first performances. We have a soloist every night, and we play the classics too, mm-hmm. and keep with the current hits of the cinema and of the Broadway shows and so forth. There's a great deal of this type of music that is secondary music that is neglected.
Yes.
That should be heard.
Indeed.
And I give it my real love and affection just as well as I would to a Brahms symphony.
Mm-hmm. One or two of these neglected numbers that you revived, for example, there was Jealousy.
Well, Jealousy was a composition that I found in a music store and among some old music, and I liked the tune right away, and I performed it, and the audience seemed to like it very well. Then I brought it to the attention of the recording company, who had never heard of it, and thought it couldn't be good because they didn't know of it.
And I believe you sold 1 million copies of that record.
Well, that was the first orchestral record that reached the 1 million mark,
mm-hmm.
for which I got a gold record.
And since then, there have been several records that have reached the 1 million mark.
Yes.
Well, now, thanks to the success you made of the orchestra during the past 35 years, it has winter tours as well as just the spring season.
It has winter tours, but not that orchestra itself. It's an orchestra that we don't mean to fly under false colors, but we call ourselves the Boston Pops Tour Orchestra, which is an orchestra assembled especially for touring. Similarly to the Sadler Wells here, you carry on your Sadler Wells performances here, and you have a troupe that goes to the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, but the recording orchestra consists
right.
of members of the Boston Symphony
right.
Orchestra. Let's have your fourth record now, Mr. Fiedler. One second.
Well, my fourth record, I think, is one that I've always enjoyed, and which I marvel at always, Rachmaninoff, and his own arrangement of the scherzo, The Midsummer Night's Dream of Mendelssohn.
Rachmaninoff playing the scherzo from Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream music.
You know, I had the great honor and the pleasure of knowing Mr. Rachmaninoff personally. He was a fantastic character, charming gentleman with a very austere bearing. First man that I ever saw with a real crew cut. I think he wanted to look less like a musician than he wanted to look more like an average businessman. And a delightful person, great musician.
Apart from your activities in Boston, you guest conducted all over the United States.
Not only the United States, but in many parts of the world.
Yes.
South America, a great deal, in Europe.
When did you first conduct in this country?
This country? I would say about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. On your last visit, I believe you played a Beatles number in Liverpool. It really caused a sensation.
No, I did it on this visit.
And it was a sensation.
It was a sensation. Not only that, but when I finished, the audience would not leave. And Mr. Grove, the conductor of the orchestra, the Royal Philharmonic of Liverpool, was backstage, and when he heard all this applause, and I said, you know, I don't want to do this again, because to encore an encore is, you know, it takes the sheen off of it. And he said, you've got to go out and do it again, and I did.
Which is the number?
I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Good. Apart from music, Mr. Fiedler, what are your hobbies?
Well, I enjoy very much and have enjoyed. I'm not working at it as hard as I would like to and as I have in the past, fire prevention and firefighting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an honorary chief in about 110 cities throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my cars in Boston, I have an official Boston fireplace and a radio which gets all the calls.
Yeah.
And whenever I can, I go.
I believe you're not unknown to the Boston police.
No, I'm an honorary commissioner of police there, too, and I have a great thrill in going out in the cruising cars and trying to follow a murder or a stabbing or what may be, you know.
Are your children going to keep up the family musical tradition?
Well, it's hard to say. They've all had music lessons, and my oldest daughter is just 19 and is at Sarah Lawrence College in New York. She's particularly interested in writing about music and perhaps wants to become a critic, which...
Oh, I say.
I say you're right. Yes, I'm watching it all right.
Let's have record five now. What next?
Well, record five will be the Gaieté Parisienne by Offenbach, arranged by Rosenthal, which would turn out to be one of my very best-selling records. And I'm playing it here on this desert island because I just want to remind myself of what I've done in the past, and also because I rarely play my own records, and it might be interesting for me to take the time to hear myself.
Opening to Offenbach's Gaieté Parisienne, played by the Boston Pops Orchestra. Now we come to your sixth record. What's that?
That I think I would like to perform would be the Overture to the Fledermaus of Johann Strauss in the Karajan recording.
Of the Overture of Die Fledermaus, played by the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Karajan. How well equipped would you be to be a castaway, Mr. Fiedler? I mean, are you a practical chap? Are you good with your hands?
Well, I've never had occasion to try very well. I do like to do things with my hands. I usually start off very well, and I get a little bit fed up with it, and it ends up pretty badly. Yeah. But I think if I were forced to do it, and it would be a wonderful way to spend the time, I'd like to create some things that might be useful or decorative even.
Yes, you'll persevere long enough to get up some kind of a shelter at any rate.
Oh, I would think I would, yes.
Could you live off the land? Have you got a gardening or anything of that sort?
Well, I like to see things grow very much, plants. I've even had fool around a little bit with mild vegetables and things of that sort. But I think it's very interesting.
Mm. But in the main, to you, a garden is a place to sit in.
Well, not even to sit in, just to walk through.
Could you build some kind of a craft, a raft, or something of that sort?
No, I've read a great deal about crafts like Contiki and people who've gone around the world in small boats and so forth, and perhaps my memory would help me a little bit in trying to emulate them.
Mm-hmm. But you have no ambitions that way.
Not really, no.
Let's get back to music. What's number seven?
Part of the Dies Irae of the Verdi Requiem, performed by Toscanini and the NBC Symphony Orchestra. I happen to have known Toscanini very well, and a very good friend of mine. I was an ardent admirer of his, still am. And I've had the great honor of having conducted the NBC Symphony on many occasions. ¶¶
The opening of the Dies Irae from the Verdi Requiem, the NBC Symphony Orchestra and the Robert Shaw Chorale, conducted by Toscanini. We come to your last record, Mr. Fiedler. What's that?
Last record is something that's rather up-to-date, or was up-to-date, a few years ago, and that is the latter part of The Rite of Spring of Stravinsky. I think a performance by Monteux, who was a very dear friend of mine, and unfortunately passed away last year, and the Paris Conservatoire Orchestra, I believe.
Section from Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring, Pierre Monteux conducting the Paris Conservatoire Orchestra. Those are your eight records, Mr. Fiedler. If you could only take one, which would it be?
Well, really, you're putting me on the spot. It is extremely difficult. As a matter of fact, it's been extremely difficult to pick these eight. As you well know, there's an embarrassment of riches. I would rather not answer that, if I may.
All right. You'll think it over. Send us a postcard.
Right. And there's no post there, is there? From the island?
No.
I put it in a bottle.
You have no bottle. It'll have to be smoke signals.
Well, how am I going to match? I have to rub sticks.
That's it.
Right.
And one luxury to take with you to the island.
Well, that is very, very difficult also. But I've been thinking about this because I was forewarned that you might ask me this. I think I would like to take a very fine pair of binoculars with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I might get tired of watching the sea and getting sand between my toes. And I might want to look for birds or animal life and perhaps look in the horizon to see that somebody might be willing to remove me from this,
right.
This island.
And one book other than the Bible or Shakespeare?
Well, it's hard to put it in one volume, but this would be a chance of a lifetime that I've been looking forward to all my life, that is, to read the Encyclopedia Britannica.
You'll come back and make a fortune on quiz programs. Well, thank you, Arthur Fiedler, for letting us hear your choice of Desert Island Discs.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye, everyone.
The guest in today's recorded program was Arthur Fiedler. The interviewer was Roy Plumley, and producer Monica Chapman.